Hey, y'all, it's Aaron from the Underground Railroad. You are tuning in to another great show on the 4EYED Radio Network. To listen to more of this show and other great shows, tune into www.4eyedradio.com.
That's right, kids. This is your good pal, Steve-O, from 4EYED Radio Network. I'm here to talk about a great person. Now, think about it. Who are you going to call when your logo looks like shit? You want a kick-ass logo. You want people to see your logo and go, you know what? That's an awesome logo. I wonder who did that logo. Well, I'll tell you who could do your logos for you. Check out Raven Designs. Special care of your work. Special inquiries? Check her out. She's got everything. RavenCruise.com is the place to go because you want a kick-ass logo. You want to stand above the rest. I guarantee it. You hear this song in the background? You know these guys have a kick-ass logo. It's a recognizable logo. And I guarantee it, if Raven was back in that time period, she probably would have made it for them. And they would have been like, hells yeah, people know who we are because we got Raven Designs behind us. Check out RavenCruise.com if you want a kick-ass logo for business cards. Maybe you want to put it on a car. These guys did. Maybe you want to put it on your building. You want something kick-ass. You want something that people can see and just go, this is awesome. Check out RavenCruise.com. And you know what? Do it. Do it right now. You got nothing else going on for you right now. Get a kick-ass logo. Check out her artwork, RavenCruise.com. Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of the Long Boxcast, featured on the 4EYED Radio Network. I am here, Kyle, and also my co-host Steve is here.
Yes, Steve-O as well. And we also have two guests in the studio. Kyle was able to hook that up.
We have Ryan Cody, owner and operator of Super 75 Comics. Go ahead and if you want to say hello.
Hello.
And we also have Jason Gonzalez, a.k.a. Jay Gonzo, artist and illustrator, Slayer of Men from his web comics. One of my favorites of yours so far that I've liked is the La Mano del Destino.
Yep.
It's very awesome. I'm liking that. And we're here because we're actually supporting the Acme Arizona Comic Mini Expo 2014, which is coming down the pike soon. And we have been lucky enough to have these gentlemen come on down and talk to us on this show. So welcome, guys. Thank you for coming
on. Yeah, one of you traveled far, didn't they?
Very far.
Yeah. Well, not that far.
I'm like East Mesa, man. That's really far.
Yeah. Yeah, I live in Flagstaff, so I just down the mountain.
Very cool. Wow. Very cool. Well, we appreciate you guys coming out, and let's do this.
Jump right on in.
Craziness.
If you want, before we start, we got some shout outs this week. We had at Social in Phoenix, at Felicia, looks like UST 745, at Adam Stabelli, at Anita 692 Anita, and at CG Expo for giving us a like and follow on our socials. So we appreciate you guys doing so. As always, we are brought to you by the 4EYED Radio Network. For listening to all our shows from Stitcher, iTunes, Zoom Marketplace, Mixcloud, BlackBerry, Blueberry Podcast, Miro Guide, Double Twist, simply click on our links and enjoy.
And also you can subscribe on iTunes. So yeah, easy for you guys.
And then, of course, we are sponsored by Raven Designs, Illustration, and Designs to fit your personality. For samples and inquiries, visit RavenCruise.com and enjoy.
So that's probably okay.
Yeah, okay.
Really, there we go.
Exactly.
Yeah, she actually just designed our new logo for the 4EYED Radio Network.
Oh, cool.
We threw those on shirts. It looks really like Eric showed me, and I was just all like, oh, I'm so glad.
She does really good work. She seems to be doing really well in California.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, I get her new setup too. Like, she had that new, even brand new, like
the trash can.
Yeah. I'm just like, geez, like they really hooked you up pretty nice there.
I'm half tempted to call her up and be like, so where are you working?
they
need more illustrators.
Yeah,
but
so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, Kyle. You
I got nothing. I didn't put any notes in.
You set this up, so.
Basically, introduce yourself, guys. Let us know what you guys are about. I know we were talking a bit on the Facebook, and I imagine they can find out more going to Facebook, or do you guys prefer the web domain for them to find out all the info?
Well, the Arizona Comic Mini Expo has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com AcmeCon, and then there's also the website, which is www.acmecon.wordpress.com, I think. That's horrible.
I think if you just Google search
Arizona Comic Mini Expo, then the Facebook page and the the blog will come up.
And the blog has links to all the social media stuff, too.
Okay, cool. Yeah, acmecon.wordpress.com. Yep. Yeah, it looks like it came right first look, and then, of course, second one is the Facebook, so you guys are right on there.
Right. So, yeah, my name's Ryan Cody. I'm a writer and artist, comic book writer and comic book artist, and I also organize the Arizona Comic Mini Expo. This year it's May 3rd at Samurai Comics in Mesa.
Cool.
Very nice. And Bookman's.
Oh, cool. So
okay, yeah.
Cross.
Yeah, yeah. Should be guests at both stores. If not, they'll all be at Samurai. But
sweet. And right, we'll be in the parking lot in a window with blackout van. Van with blackout windows.
To be fair, that describes like 10 cars.
I know.
In that parking lot.
Yeah. We'll be the one that is cleaner. I think we'll have a shinier white car.
Yeah, you guys will be out front of the Bosa probably getting some donuts.
That's probably true. Yeah, that place is awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where we'll be.
Oh yeah, I'm Jay Gonzo. Artist, writer of La Mano del Destino. I'm also this year. I was a guest last year at Acme, and then, this year I'm helping to organize the drink and draw event that we have going on beforehand, the night before at the Film Bar. Has been gracious enough to have us host us there.
Oh, so very cool. Oh, sweet.
So we're gonna have whatever artist can make it out to drink and draw. We're gonna have some artwork from the artist up at the show. So very definitely cool. Should be a good time. There's still talk about maybe doing some film tie-in, but they're pretty booked on their schedule, so they don't know what they can or can't fit in. But at the very least, all the artists will be there drinking and drawing. It's a great place to have a drink, and it's a great place to see a movie if anyone hasn't been to the film.
Yeah, okay, I actually saw, was it The Room there?
Yeah, oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, that place is great. So that was fun.
Yeah, I saw the whole month of May, we'll have there'll be artwork hanging up in the bar.
Oh, cool.
Sorry, film bar.
And obviously the proceeds go to the artist, or they go into like a charity? Okay, great.
Artists.
Perfect.
So it is a charity for them too.
If you want to support
starving artists.
Well, yeah, exactly. So if you want to support the local artists and such, great. I think that's awesome.
That's very cool. I'm trying to think what else was there. So I guess the biggest question is what got you into either reading comics and then decided, you know what, I want to make a career out of this?
For me, I read comics. I just started picking them up at like the grocery stores and stuff when I was a kid. And then I really got hooked on like Chris Claremont's X-Men run. And
oh, nice.
When Excalibur started, I was really big on that. And then as I got older, when Image first started, like a lot of guys my age, we wanted to draw comics because those guys, Jim Lee and Mark Silvestri.
Yeah.
For me, even like Rob Liefeld, like when I was a little kid, that shit blew my mind. So that's why I wanted to be an artist.
Very nice. How about yourself?
Oh, yeah. I've always been drawing since I was a kid, and When I was younger, I grew up in L.A. Actually, just on the Orange County side of L.A. But my grandparents lived in L.A. in Pico Rivera, actually. When I was a kid, the Sunday comics were in Orange County were kind of your typical Garfield and Bloom County, what have you. But at the L.A. Register had Spider-Man, the weekly Spider-Man strip. And I used to go to my grandparents, and my grandparents would cut out the Spider-Man strip because they knew I loved it. And it was just such a huge departure from the really cartoony stuff that you saw in the typical newspaper strips. And I just fell in love with Spider-Man, fell in love with that art style. And then somewhere around like 9 or 10, I was skateboarding around with a friend of mine, and we stopped at a 7-Eleven to get something to drink. And there was a spinner rack, and he was like, "Oh, I got to get my G.I. Joe." And he just pulls off like G.I. Joe, I think like 13 or something. And I just remember thumbing through it and just seeing page after page, panel after panel of this art style I love from Spider-Man. I'm like, oh shit, they make these things.
Yeah, like, oh, other things too.
These things happen. And then I was like, oh, people do this still. Like, this is a job. I can do this. And I'm like, I can draw. I love this style. Like, this is what I want to do. So, somewhere around like 9 or 10, I just decided that's what I wanted to do. Yeah,
that
so
is awesome.
Took a lot of detours, but
Yeah. I think that most comic artists do that. Like, even Todd McFarlane said that when he was up in Canada, he started with just like drawing a hand and then the arm and then connecting them and sending like millions and millions and millions of things out to like Marvel. And then eventually they finally said, okay, enough. Quit sending this stuff.
I worked for Todd for like 4 years.
Oh, very nice.
He was my direct boss and everything. Yeah. So he's,
nice.
And I, one of the things I did while I was there is we curated a museum show for him.
Oh,
and
sweet.
One of the things that we showed was the pile of rejection letters that he had. It's a pretty substantial box too, you got to. You got to admire a guy who takes that much rejection and just is like, I'm going to do better the next time.
I've been a huge fan of Spawn. Like, for me, I think Steve and I were the same. We went to like the Safeway
and they have the spinner rack. And we started off with like the Donald Ducks and the Goofies and Disney like Tales books were what we started off with, and then grew up from there.
Yeah, and then went into like the X-Men, the Marvel. I think the Marvel was the big influence because during that time, I think it was like 1991 when they decided to do the trading cards of Marvel, and that became like ridiculous because then it was like, I got to get the hologram, I got to get that. So it was really kind of cool because then you can flip over the cards and there'd be like all their stats and everything. And I just loved it. It was funny because like Spider-Man, like his intelligence was like off the charts, but then like his strength, it's all like, he's like, well, he's smarter than Wolverine, but not as powerful. But
yeah, like,
when I started grabbing comics, it was right when the Ohatmu was coming out. They were on C when I started collecting comics. And so I could find back issues of A and B.
Oh,
and
cool.
I bought all those and they had the power chart in the background in the last page.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, people ranked. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's very cool. Yeah, actually, it was like I used to go to the Todd McFarlane store, actually not too far from here. And I would get like I went in actually one time, and I guess he just came back from doing something, and he had a whole bunch of their figures just like signed. So I have like a whole bunch of Corpse Bride's like toys just like signed.
Nice.
So I was just like, yeah, I've always been a huge fan of his stuff because he was smart when it came to his like when his action figures first came out, they were just like action figures, and then now he's like, no, they're kind of like a statue, kind of set them up and all that kind of cool stuff.
Oh yeah,
so.
Yeah, I grew up, 7th grade, I think, is when I was really into the Spawn, and I really loved, like, drawing his style and, like, everything. And I got to meet him once at a Toys R Us signing, like, same thing, he was just there signing, and then I met him again at the Comic-Con that one year he was here. And what was awesome is, like, he had stayed, like, all the way till the end, like, literally was, like, walking out the door still signing stuff for people.
Oh, yeah, he's a madman when it comes to that stuff. I've seen him go 3 hours past when we said we were closing down.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And as one of his employees, I got to stay the 3 hours past.
You're like, thanks a lot. Overtime.
Exactly.
He's got it was funny, though, because we did his comic, like, he was showing us how to draw and stuff like that on one of the panels, and it was so disappointing because he's like, oh, so who do you want me to draw? And everyone raised their hand, and they're like, Spawn. I was all like, really? Pick, like, Venom.
Yeah,
that would have been, like wicked, really cool to see because, like, he kind of created that. So.
Yeah. I love watching him work, too. Like, that was one of the bigger highlights because he'd take a meeting and he'd be inking over Greg Capullo in a meeting.
Geez. Oh, yeah.
And not only is he kicking ass on the drawing part of it, but he's also listening to every word that was
happening.
Yeah, so you think, like, oh, he's just in his little world.
Yeah, yeah,
he's, like,
no.
Chiming in.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's cool.
He's all there. So enough Todd talks.
Yeah, no.
Get out of here. It's not about you.
Ryan's just, like, nodding his head. Like,
yeah, Todd's okay.
I'm good.
Well, who's one of you guys' favorite artists that if you got a chance to, like, work for him or meet him or be him or, like, wear his skin, like, who would it be? I'm just saying, like, they could be it.
Right now, I think one of my my dream project would be probably working with Mike Mignola in the BPRD.
Oh, nice.
Just to be one of those guys who's in the rotation that gets to draw a miniseries, like, once or twice a year.
I could see you in that world, man. Like, you do that well. I could definitely... Have you reached out to him or tried to talk to anyone at Dark Horse?
No, I did some work for Dark Horse last year, so I'm going to slowly try to keep pushing.
Very cool.
Nice. Just get it out there, get the foot in the door.
Yeah, that's
nice.
Really the only, as far as, I mean, of course I would like to, like, someday do, like, an X-Men book, but not, I don't know if I'd like to do, like, the main monthly X-Men book. It'd be fun to do, like, a graphic novel or something.
Oh, no,
that'd be cool.
But yeah, as far as big two companies, I really don't have much desire, other than, like, a work-for-hire thing. I'll do anything they want to pay me to work on. But,
right.
Like,
oh, very cool.
Dream books would be, like, BPRD.
Nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Art-wise, I think the guy I'll just buy anything that he does is Darwin Cook right now.
Oh, yeah,
Influence-wise, like Jack Kirby. I mean, anyone who's seen my comic, I mean, like, I've had people come at me sideways asking me about who my influences are. Like I'm not going to say Jack, but, I mean, if you've seen my work, you know I love Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
Like, my work is a love letter to Jack. But currently, I love Darwin Cook. Like, he pretty much just puts down what needs to be down and leaves everything else out and stuff. But
and you're there interested, if our listeners are interested, it's jgonzodesigns.com?
That's my, like, me, like, that's me selling me as an artist, essentially.
Okay.
My comic site is castleandkeypublications.com.
Castle and Key Publications.
And that's where you can read the 3 issues of Lamano that I've done so far are there for free. And they've got links to my social media and to my my store and stuff. Like, I currently am out of issue 2s, but when issue 4 happens, I'm going to reprint 2. So,
okay.
But you can get issue 1 and issue 3, and you can read 2 online, and then I've got other, you know, shameless self-promotion stuff I can plug here. So.
Oh, yeah, go right ahead.
Definitely.
Plug away.
Whatever you're working on, but, whatever you're doing, yeah.
Yeah, and then the thing, like Ryan was talking about dream project-wise, man, like I think my dream would be to work on Spider-Man someday. I mean, he's what got me into comics. I have a weird superstition about it where I don't really draw Spider-Man.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to do it until it's, like, for
like,
real.
Until they're like, hey,
yeah,
by the way,
we'd
like
you
to
do Spider-Man, which is weird because I have no idea what I'd do with Spider-Man. But I also like the idea of doing, like, a C-level character at one of the big two. Like, I put a Buona Beach pitch together a while ago where where he was this like a luchador in Mexico.
When you said sea level, I was like, oh, like Namor. Or
no, 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 no. Yeah. Like way, like I'm thinking like D level maybe. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, like I love the idea of like doing, you know, like I have this Buonabeast idea that I had where he was like a luchador who may or may not just be like believing his own backstory. You know, like, is he really a superpowered, you know, hero, or is he just a crazy wrestler who's buying his own, you know, story?
That's what we really liked about the Justice League saga they did a while back with Wildcat.
Yeah.
Where he was, like, underground fighting, because it was just the only way he could make a buck was, like, him being an underground fighter.
You know, we
thought that was, like, I would love to see something more like that, like you said, like someone coming up.
Yeah, because he was talking about, like, in that episode, he was all like, you know, he's like, you already have all these big superheroes. It's like, you don't need somebody like me. It's like, and then all I get is this kind of like grunt work. So he's like, for me to feel alive is beating the crap out of these supervillains, you know, at this arena thing.
Yeah, getting it's
kind of a cool.
Yeah, my pitch was that kind of thing where it was like, he's living on, like, he's in Mexico, he's handling kind of like real, just, you know, guys fucking up the environment kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
Like, not, you know, it's no world ending. I think stakes in superhero comics have gotten a little out of hand.
Like, yeah, where it's like,
it's always,
know,
the world's gonna end.
Yeah, yeah, like the planet's about to blow up.
How about just my neighborhood's gonna get fucked
up?
Yeah,
exactly.
Like the
forest fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Like pollution, so water levels and stuff.
And that's the kind of thing that I'd like to kind of back down the stakes, because we've gotten to, you know, world destruction and rape and murder, you know, and it's like, let's just get into like a big corporation.
The big corporation coming in and taking out all
that sort of like an A-Team episode, you know, it's like,
exactly,
you know, swoop in, we got to keep the big bad guy from running, ruining this town. So, yeah, so I mean, I like the idea of doing like stuff that's, you know, like take the Challengers of the Unknown or something and just do like a nice kind of ground level story with those things. And so that's like my dream gig.
Awesome.
That
that's cool.
I'm looking forward to that. Like, I think that'd be pretty slick. Like, I agree too. I feel like sometimes like, Denny O'Neill's talking about, like, with Superman, like, it got way out of hand where, like, a guy who could blow out a star, you know, how do you make him vulnerable and how do you have that, like, conflict? And it is hard. Like, it's hard to relate to somebody who can do that where, like, that's why I think, like, the Batman and obviously some, like, more named characters got bigger because it was like, oh, he's relatable. Like, I can actually, like, see where he's coming from. And stuff.
Yeah, and he's not really, like, it's not always like, oh, Batman's going to save the Earth, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, he's just like, I'm just sticking with Gotham right now.
Yeah, I'm in here. Like, you guys go handle that. Any favorite character you guys have, like, followed from, like, obviously when you started collecting up till now, or once you always come back to? Like, what are some of your go-to characters you like?
I'm terrible in the fact that I don't really buy comics.
You create them. You are a master. You are a god.
I mean, when I was reading comics regularly, I mean, there was, like, a 20-year span where I bought, like, X-Men monthly for, like, 20 years. But right now, I just tend to follow creators more than characters.
Okay.
So, like, you know, depending on who's drawn an arc or who's drawn a miniseries, I'll pick it up regardless of
what
the
it is,
company
or
the character.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
So that's what I do.
Yeah, I'm about the same boat. Like, I'll buy anything that, like, Trad Moore draws. Like,
oh,
I'm on
okay.
board. Like, I don't care what it is. Like, I'm reading this. I'm going to go get that
My
Ghost
Little
Rider.
Pony.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Tom Scholey's another guy. I'm just going to buy whatever he does.
Nice.
And
I can't wait for the Alan Moore's run at the My Little Pony storyline.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. that really, it is a dark horse.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I think for us, like, I think anything that they're doing right now with like Denny O'Neill, mainly because he's picking back up on some writings and stuff. Like, I like a lot of his work. I'm definitely getting more back into writers. Like, I love artists through and through, but I'm getting back into, like, more of the writing again.
Yeah.
Because a lot of that's just come, like, full circle, where it used to be very cheesy but really awesome art, and now you're kind of getting back to more of a better art style, but, like, a really good story. And that's what I think is really selling them now.
Well, I think it got very editor heavy for a while. It was about the crossover. It was about the guys who ran, like, the Bat Group or the Justice League group, and those guys who can tie in their 19 books into each other and just make the storyline kind of cohesive across a bunch of titles, which is an editor's job. And so writers weren't allowed to do their job. It's hard to ask a writer to okay, you got to tell a story, but we need you to start here. We need this to happen in the middle, and then we need you to end here.
Right.
Like,
instead,
how much
they just
work?
Want to write.
Yeah.
Exactly. How much playroom do you have? And, you know, there's guys who do it better than others, but I think that Marvel especially is really loosened up on their, like, just make sure you don't fuck these areas up, and you can do whatever you want. So you get, like, Wade coming in on Daredevil and just hitting reset on the character and just saying, look, we're going to acknowledge all that dark, shitty stuff that Bendis, you know, foisted upon him for the past 10, 15 years. It acknowledged that it happened and just say, yeah, it was crap. And I mean, like, I think it was super dismissive.
Yeah,
I thought, which is a great power move, is like, yeah, that was all shitty and I'm not going to focus on it, which everyone had been so slavishly devoted, like, to what Miller had done with the character, that they were just trying to extend that out into the future, which is unsustainable. You can't just continue to get, you know, grittier and grittier. I mean, especially not after his girlfriend's like raped and murdered and stuff. It's like,
yeah, like where do you go from there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like what happens other than him having to go to prison and now he gets raped and, you know,
it's something else.
That's what I think Marvel's doing right.
Oh, I didn't see it coming though. So
yeah, literally.
Yeah.
That's what I think Marvel's doing right with the way that they're rebooting the books. It's not like ridiculous like with what DC did.
I was just going to ask what people's
Marvel's
opinion
just
was.
Sort of like, we're just going to relaunch X-Men with Stuart Immonen on it. It's going to be the best superhero book on the stands, and we're just going to really not even acknowledge the last 30 years.
Right.
You don't have to. I mean, you don't have to ignore it, and you don't have to acknowledge it, and you also don't have to It doesn't have to be a complete brand new reboot. Just start your story and tell your story.
Right, and everyone else will kind of fill in.
Yeah, who gives a shit what happens, like, you know. So that's why I like with the Daredevil book and the X-Men book.
Actually, that's what I was going to ask you guys, because I've been trying to, like, I got back into, like, DC doing the new 52s and stuff like that, and I kind of just went closer to the home. It's like, well, I'm a huge Batman fan, so let's stick with that. But then I started branching out. Like, I really got into The Flash now. I like what they're doing with that one. But I was like, I want to get back into Marvel again. Like, I do have some Marvel books, but they're, like, you know, a while ago. I'm like, what would be a good jumping on part for, like, a Marvel? Like, I'm like, I haven't been in it in a while, so I have no idea, like, what's happening. Well, what would be a good starter book?
If you grew up liking the X-Men, I would say all new X-Men is great.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons I was so happy to get Stuart to come out for Acme, is just that I think, hands down, he's the best superhero artist working. I mean, Chris Samnee's great. I guess I don't consider Daredevil that much of a superhero. I guess it is a superhero book, but I'm talking about, like, epic scale shit. I think Stuart Immonen's the best working right now, and that's a fun book.
Okay, cool. I'll check that out then.
Yeah, I can't recommend Daredevil enough. Yeah. I mean, they just finished that 30-issue run or 32-issue run, whatever it was, and then now they're moving him to San Francisco, kind of restarting the book, but they're continuing the storyline, which I don't, you know, things like continuity and numbering, I think, kind of trip up comics more than they help them.
Yeah.
Again, like Ryan was just saying, like, just tell your story. Like, I think you get guys like Loeb, who love that they have this encyclopedic knowledge of the past 75 years of their character's
like
history.
Like, draw from whatever.
Mm-hmm. But that, you know, and I've heard this said a lot, but that tethers, you know, when you have continuity like that, and events especially, it tethers your best writers to your worst writers.
Yeah.
Because now they have to acknowledge that things, you know, like in Marvel, you have to acknowledge that things like the Clone Saga happened.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, just move forward, you know. We all have shitty stuff that happened in our lives that we just never talk about.
Yeah, that's true. No. Yeah, that's true.
Just
block
it out.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Never happened.
So why can't comics do the same?
That's true, yeah. Especially, during the whole Superman saga, they did that whole, like, the 70s where it got very campy.
Yeah.
And it was, like, even, like, Lois became, like, almost like a raging bitch to the point where it's like, well, why would he love her? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, why is he like, oh, Lois, I can't upset you?
Well, it's like DC now. They're doing that whole, like, 1960s Batman run coming up soon, where it's the old artwork and, like, old stuff from the show, which I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
It's a really good – that's a great book. I think Allred does the covers. And I forget who's doing the interiors. But it's fun because they just tell Batman stories.
Yeah.
And the stakes aren't they're not out of hand. You know?
Yeah, it's not like he's on he's not on the rooftop about to jump on a pit of, you know, bad guys and start wailing.
Instead,
it's more like, you know,
me and Robin will drive to the Burger King.
It was Mike Allred did a solo for DC, which was those books where one artist did the entirety of the book and they just told a bunch of stories. It was like 2004.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. Darwin Cook did one and stuff, but the Mike Allred one is fantastic. Which I love Allred's work as well too. But he did a Batman story in there, and it kind of starts off as this like 60s Batman. And then the storyline starts progressing into what's more of like a Frank Miller tone.
Oh, wow.
But it's still drawn by Allred, so it's got that kind of 60s, you know, feel to it. And you see Batman is like the focal point, like the I guess your entry point, and you see like how appalled he is by like things like people getting murdered and stuff like that. And it's a great commentary on that kind of darkening up of comics while having this kind of fresh-eyed character, you know, as a protagonist. And then it ultimately wraps up really well. I mean, like, at one point, like, Batman's quoting Nietzsche in it. I mean, it's like, it's really,
oh, that's really
like,
cool.
It's like heavy, and then it kind of wraps up very lightly. And I think it was just such a brilliant commentary on that idea.
To see how it's gone from.
I think Kevin Smith did that, I think, with Wiring Gyro. Like, it starts off with him being like the campy Batman with Little Boy Robin and stuff like that, and like this first run, and then it goes into like where they are at now, and like is Nightwing, and then Batman's like, you know, darker and stuff. So I thought that was kind of a cool twist, because they even had those like bad lines where like Robin jumps down, he's all like, check this out. out, Batman. And now he's all like, yeah, there's a murder.
there's a corpse over there.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of funny where they, it's kind of cool with that because they're not really dismissing that Adam West Batman where it's like, yeah, Adam West Batman actually got a lot of people into Batman during that time period. But yeah, I mean, it is campy, but it is kind of like a, it's like a funny campy. Actually, that's actually Batman Brave and the Bold for me.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
if you take it as what it is, it's actually a really good show. Like, it's just like the woman's all like, you want to go out to dinner? He's like, what was it? Evil doesn't take dinner breaks, and neither do I. And then, like, he takes off. You're just like, okay.
Oh, man. Yeah, I with the stuff I do, I always, like, when I'm at shows and stuff, I always start my pitch when people are like, oh, what's this about? I'm like, eh, remember when comics were fun?
Yeah.
Like, that's how I start
my
pitch.
When it was, a joy to pick up and, like, oh, boy, like, it was okay. It was, like, a good escape because now it's, like, they're almost, like, so real that you're like, oh,
yeah,
I'm trying to escape the
like, I don't mind darker tone comics and stuff like that. But, yeah, I remember where, like, you could pick up an issue of something and you just enjoy it. It was just a good run. And, like, now people are just really, like – like, people, like, some people still dismiss, like, the campiness of, like, certain things. They'll be like, oh, like, especially, like, with, you know, like, the Michael Keaton Batman, you know, when it first came out, it was a pretty dark Batman, you know? Yeah. It wasn't, like, Christopher Nolan's Batman, but now people watch the Christopher Nolan and be like, oh, Michael Keaton's Batman was shit. It's all like, well, not really. I mean, you gotta look at the time period and stuff, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what invited you to want to start going to the cons and sort of really promoting? And, like, what about you wanted to have you start running a con and really said, you know, I really want to take this over and really, you know, grow and grow and grow it?
Well, for me, it's I don't do a lot of cons a year. I do about 3 or 4 a year. And I usually do the same 3 or 4 a year just because I have an idea of how you're treated at them and whatever. But even the cons that I love, there's certain things about cons I can't stand. And one of them is – all the media guests, all the
oh shit,
everything that has nothing to do with comics,
right? Well, they're just there to make like a news story. They're not there to actually like report.
No,
on
I'm talking
them.
More like the movie stars and TV stars.
Oh, okay, even
not,
better.
Not like news media, or I'm talking about like.
Oh, I was about to say, I'm like, probably should tell them I got a media pass.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
no, I'm talking about like, you know, a con that promotes where the comic guests are promoted third behind.
The actual, you know,
and it makes sense. I understand the business of it. If it was, they wouldn't be getting, you know, 60,000 people through the door if they did not have people from the Walking Dead TV show there.
But maybe make it like Sunday as opposed to like the main event.
No, I mean, they could do whatever they want, really. And I understand it's a business and it's a good business for the people who own these cons. But for me, I wanted more like just creators, just. Something I would have liked when I was 15 or 16, I would have loved to go to a store and have 20 guys who all know what they're doing to just pick their brains and shoot the shit and you know, talk to them. So that was the idea behind Acme was Phoenix. You know, Portland has a huge collection of comic pros that's unprecedented. New York City has a lot. Mm-hmm. Phoenix actually has a ton. So the whole idea behind the Arizona Comic Mini Expo was let me get, first of all, my friends, but also these guys are really – professional level, you know, pretty much everyone around the table has done something at a professional publisher, or in my mind, they're good enough too if they haven't yet. But I mean, we got Scott Collins, DC artist, Jay Photos has done coloring for every company, Hi-Fi Colors done coloring for every company. You know, we got Boom, guys who've done work for Boom and Image and Dark Horse and Marvel, DC, you know, really some of the top guys in the valley. Who are all cool. I mean, everyone there, no one's a dick. Everyone's cool.
Yeah.
That's really the whole idea. Something I would have wanted when I was a kid. I didn't see that really at cons. You know, I saw like the local guys getting pushed all together into one area.
Yeah, like in a corner.
Yeah, like an artist alley.
It's like, there's the local dudes. We're going to pass them and we're going to go to see a guest who came in from somewhere
else. And
you
have to pay to see them and all that.
Yeah, so... yeah, so my idea was like, let's do it. The reason we do it on Free Comic Book Day is just logistics. We want to get as many people in the door as possible.
Yeah.
So let's do it on Free Comic Book Day. And kind of a throwback to when my friend Mike Malvey used to own Atomic Comics. He always had huge blowout Free Comic Book Day events.
Mm.
And so...
which we miss. Like, we talk about Atomic all the time.
Yeah.
Like, on all the networks.
So
that's
what I do with Samurai. Like, oh. I mean, same location. Mike Banks is Samurai.
Kind of
stepped right into that role. He's an amazing retailer. And... he basically lets me do whatever I want, and he just supplies the tables.
Nice.
And
maybe
and,
a long box live show there.
Yeah, maybe. So yeah, I mean, we got some great. I'm going to take a minute to talk about the sponsors because without them,
feel free.
Without them, it would just be people who live in Phoenix, really. But you know, Bookman's is always a big supporter every year. So Bookman's and Samurai are the two biggest supporters. Without them, I could never do it. And then this year, we've got some great people stepping in. We got Acme Prints is a printer in Scottsdale. They're doing all of our print material.
Oh, nice.
Oh, cool.
Chiba Hut's giving us food.
Oh, nice.
Film Bar's going to let us set up there for a month with some original art and let us hang out there the night before Acme. National Comedy Theater Company in Mesa. They do live improv comedy. And Polsinelli Law Group. My friend Andrew Turk is a lawyer there.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And Andrew is a huge comic book fan. And so
even better. Okay.
Very cool. As well. Actually, I don't know if you guys – maybe you guys probably should also talk to them too. Critical Care Comics.
If you guys are aware
they, of them. They actually take comics that get donated and they give those out to children's hospitals. So while they're getting like either their IVs or they're in their cancer
treatments,
and stuff,
they
have something to read and stuff. It's just a huge cool. donation thing. So yeah. I know they're based out of Los Angeles, but there's a one here now. Zeph, actually, he's been on the show a couple of times. We actually talk about him on this one. But yeah, they do this huge like Critical Care Comic thing. So that's actually probably that's another cool. thing to actually work into because they would love probably local artists and probably even get some. We've been trying to get something together for like a charity event where like people auction off artwork maybe to go for something or something like that. So
well, yeah, we do the we also on top of Acme, I also run the local chapter of the Phoenix Drink and Draw.
Oh, cool.
I like to be snobbish about it and be like the official chapter.
Right. Like everyone else has copied you. You are the
well,
official.
I kind of copied the dudes in L.A., but I got their blessing. You yeah. know, I kind of know Dan Panosian.
But first in Arizona,
bit, so,
though.
Yeah,
like,
first
it's not
in Arizona.
Like...
So we could do something like that where we have a drink and draw one night and all the work there would just give to this guy and he can sell it.
That'd be cool.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be cool, yeah. But yeah, we're all about that kind of, you know, just everybody promotion and stuff. It's funny because we've actually had guests come on the show or like ask me, be like, oh, do I have to pay to be on your show? I'm like, no. I'm like, you guys are passionate about something. I want you to guys come out, promote your stuff. It's we get people to listen in and hopefully more people like, hey, I like their show or these guys were great on the show and then get you guys more like publicity and stuff like that. So I think it's great that you guys got a huge just a bunch of events. Now, Phoenix Comic-Con this year, I know, is in June. Will you two be at this place? You guys have booths? Are you guys doing any panels?
Yeah, I'll be in Artist Alley and I'll be doing
a
panel.
I'll be there. I don't know if I'm Small Press or Artist Alley, but I definitely have a table there.
Okay, okay
great.
Cool.
Well, and definitely once you guys get that info, like whatever
yeah, number, whatever number it is,
we'll start promoting
it
as well. And you, I guess Corey Walker, the guy who's done Invincible and stuff, did the logo. Like,
yeah,
how do you guys
every year,
that come
every
about?
Year we kind of want to have like a space theme. In the first 2 years, Scott Godlewski drew it, and then this year I wanted Corey to do it, and he agreed to do it.
And that was it. You just asked him, and he was like, "Sure," and just no problems. It
yeah,
was awesome.
That's
kinda,
really
it's kind of cool because Corey. I try not to geek out around him now that I've got to know him a little bit.
It's hard to do.
He's
yeah.
one of my favorite artists. I really wish he did more work, but yeah, he did the mascot this year and it kicks ass.
Nice, oh,
very cool.
Yeah, it looks
very
slick. Cool. Like I love it. I love the shirts too. You guys have yeah. coming out that people can pick up as well. Like it's got that logo right on front. And
yep.
Looks really slick. And again, that's cool. May 3rd, 2014,
yes.
Saturday. Obviously, you guys are gonna be at the Film Bar the night before. Doing the drink and draw.
Yeah.
And obviously we'll put links up too. So if you guys don't know where that stuff is, you have no
yeah,
clue where to go.
Yeah, like, you can find it on the webpage once the show drops and everything like that. So along with all your guys' links to promote all your good stuff.
Samurai
so.
And all those fun guys.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else we got? We got some other stuff I was going to ask you. TMNT trailer just dropped this Friday. Have you guys had a chance to see that?
Oh, yeah. I checked it out.
Yeah, I saw it. And I honestly,
so before we jump into the actual trailer, let's ask them, are you guys fans of the Teenage Mutant
yeah,
Ninja Turtles,
no, see,
like comics?
That's the thing is like a lot of guys my age and a lot of my friends are huge into that. I am not.
Okay.
I really,
like you just had missed or you just were never like, didn't
it just,
like it?
It didn't really. I mean, I'd watch. I was a little old for the cartoon, I think. When it hit,
when it finally hit the
I wasn't
airwaves.
Into I was like a Marvel zombie when I was a kid, so
oh, okay.
I wasn't buying the black and white comics.
Gotcha.
So it didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, okay. I the first time I ever made it to a comic shop, like issue 2 of TMNT had dropped. So I remember, you know, like I bought issue 2. Ones were just gone, you know, but I think I got to borrow one to read it. So I read, yeah, the first dozen or so issues, and I was a fan of the comic, and then. And then the cartoon came out when I was like, I don't know, like a sophomore in high school or something.
Okay.
So, and I just remember watching the theme song start it and just being like, oh no,
like
this is not at all
the wave.
Be, yeah,
yeah, the
yeah
wave just hits you like
disappointment,
which is perfect. Funny. 'Cause I think the theme song was written by the guy who writes for the Big Bang Theory. like him and his buddy.
Oh, are actually the writers of the show.
Yeah, like they came up with the song, but they didn't do anything with it. They didn't think it was going to be that huge, and that's like one of the number one songs. He's like, son of a bitch, no like, royalties. Yeah, well, I was young when it came out because it was like 1987, so I was probably like 3 or 4. So I was all about the cartoon show and take it for what it is. I do like the new version of it on Nickelodeon right now. I know a lot of people are like, oh, I don't like it, but I kind of like it because they took a lot of things from every aspect of Ninja Turtles and put it together. So you're kind of like, okay, this is kind of, at least you're not like just kind of disregarding things. And that's the biggest problem I think a lot of people are having with the new movie is I'm like, you have to look at every version of the Ninja Turtles does have a different thing in it. Like they've tweaked something, they switched something around or something like that. Because apparently the original comic actually, it was a tie-in also to Daredevil.
Yeah, it was, because the goo that made them. Yeah. Yeah. And it literally was a commentary on how dark comics had gotten. Like mm-hmm. it was, they were making fun of how gritty, I mean, that's why their teeth are gritting and almost every panel. And so it's a weird kind of thing when something that's done as parody, people see that and think that you're being authentic.
Right. Yeah.
It's like the high-waisted jeans, you know, like hipsters start wearing them and they're like, ah, look at these fucking jeans. And then people slightly younger than that are like, oh, those high-waisted jeans look cool. Now they're wearing them, you know, unironically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now we've got, you know, people looking like the 90s walking around.
Yeah.
So, you
know, so it's like, hey, 90s, Seattle's want their...
Yeah. Yeah.
Want their
wasn't a good look. You know, rompers weren't a good look in the 90s. And they're not a good look now. Yeah.
So, if you guys seen the trailer, so what are your first opinions of this?
It looks like a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, that is true.
It's a lot of shit blowing up. I honestly, at this point with the Turtles, they're just not for me. Like, I saw it, and I'm just kind of like, meh.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah, not really.
If my son wants to see it, I might take him, or I might just give him money to go see it.
Yeah, here, so that's fine, too.
That's what I do as my kids get older. Like, I'm not going to go see this.
Right, not with you. Yeah,
yeah, so, yeah, that's actually a good thing. When they're really little, you're like, oh, I got to take it. To this. But now it's all like, wait, you're, what, 13? You're good.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah, get out of here.
Yeah, but even my kids, I don't think, I mean, not that they talk about it, but I don't even think that's for my kids. Like, I don't even think my teenagers would be into it, you know?
I think it's for the people who didn't get the irony of the first of the first comic book, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I've been noticing that too. A lot of the comments on there, people are like, oh, this looks great. And I'm like, how can it look great? Like, how do you
Well, a lot of people are like meh, and a lot of people are like, oh, this looks awesome. And to me, I think it's just I have this whole backlash with it. Like, I saw the trailer and I'm still kind of up in the air. I'm like, they're keeping some stuff that I like, and I'm like, regardless, I'm gonna have to see this movie because everyone's been like, you've been bitching about Michael Bay for like your entire span of the podcasting, so you need to see the movie and let us know what you're gonna see, Steve. So, but like, you see the trailer, it's like, I'm like, Leonardo looks pretty good. I mean, the turtles are huge now, so it's like, okay, so it's basically, I think they just removed Transformers and put turtles in now. But it's just kind of like, it's only like a minute and 30 seconds, so it's like you really have nothing to go off of. But I just think when the script was first released, where he's all like, oh, they're going to be aliens, they're going to be trained by Casey Jones, he doesn't tell them apart, he's just going to give them bandanas. So I'm like, so Casey Jones is a racist with aliens? He can't tell them apart? I'm like, okay.
I think that's a species, to be honest. Yeah, exactly. Not a racist.
Yeah, so species inclined.
And then I'm like, what about Splinter? Is he going to be in the movie? If they're being trained by this guy? I'm like, it's just like, there's so much stuff that happened with this movie that was just like, okay. And then they finally released the trailer, and then it's like, well, you really didn't show us that much. You showed us a little bit, kind of got us like, oh, okay. But now it's like, it's not like the first Transformer trailer when you finally released that and we're like, holy crap, this could actually be good. And then you did two more and we're like, what the fuck?
Well, what about like movies and stuff too? I know obviously like heroes movies seem to be kind of like the Hollywood go-to now. Like whenever they want to make like billions of dollars over the summer, they always try to pick a hero movie. Do you guys get as jazzed about that, seeing some of these heroes come to the screen, or are you more like still more traditional and you love just like, I'd rather pick up a book and read that as opposed to going to see like a two-hour film about a character?
For me, I just realize there are two different things, and so the movie's not gonna be as cool as I think it should be, because it's never, there's always constraints on things that there's never a constraint on a comic.
Yes.
Like I always tell people, they're like, well, what kind of comic do you want to draw? I was like, I want to draw a dude getting punched through a fucking mountain. Like that's why I want it. Like, that's why I would like to do a Hulk one shot. And all he does, all it is like him and the Abomination punching each other.
And just like the mountains, like,
because there's no budget. I could do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah. Need to be like, oh wait, well we now have.
And so even like, you know, like on a rewatch, the first Captain America, to me, I was just talking to a guy about this last night, but there's a scene where he like jumps a motorcycle over like a dirt, like off a dirt ramp. And I'm like, that's fucking lame. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So like, the Avengers kind of got it right. although there's two sides of that. Like the wanton destruction of an entire city kind of freaks me out. Like, oh, that's not really a great message.
Right. Like, mm-hmm. Stay in school, like kids. Yeah.
Like Man of Steel, there was never even a line in there that said like, let's evacuate the city.
Right. Like get the people out of here. Like, I'll try to hold them off. 80,000
people would have fucking died in that thing. And at the end, he's like kissing Lois. And I'm like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are outraged because he snapped Zod's neck. Maybe they should be outraged at the 80,000 people that are dead.
And that's the weird part too. It was such an easy line they could have done. They could have just been like, that's, oh, exactly.
Yeah, evacuations are on the way or something.
You know,
yeah.
People are, you know, oh, we evacuated like 10,000 people already. We're still doing just a simple line, but they're like, fuck it.
Well, see, in the Avengers, they at least made that line.
Right, they try to get people out.
Yeah.
Yeah, get the people out of here, block up.
But that's what I want to see for my superhero movies, honestly. I do want to see more of like the Hulk just going ape shit. And
just throwing people through stuff. And
no, I agree on that. But yeah, I look at it that way too, because a lot of comic book fans always get angry at the movies. Like, it's nothing like the comic book. I'm like, so you're telling me if you go see the Avengers and they just took a comic of the Avengers and just put it, you already knew it was going to happen. You already knew everything was. There was no excitement. I'm like, they're going to be two different things. To me, I look at movies now. I'm like, if I go into a movie and it entertained me, it did its job. You know, not, I'm not going to sit there and nitpick at everything, and just, because then you're just miserable. Because that happened.
Because that happened
to me with Spider-Man 3. Because like, I love Spider-Man and everything that. And then Spider-Man 3, I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And then you just watch it, and it's like, what the fuck?
Mike Malvey took us out to see Superman 3 before a free comic book day. So I think like maybe Scotty Young was out and some other people were out, and we all went, and Mike paid for it, and we all went to see it. And it's the only movie I ever wanted to walk out of that I got to see for free. Like, it was, I could not. All I was like, I just want to go to the bar. This
like,
is
yeah,
miserable.
Let's just drink about how bad this movie was. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So what about you? Any exciting movies that you're like, oh, this could be a cool iteration?
I think the new Captain America looks like it's going to be good. So I'm on board for that.
Okay, cool.
And then what else is coming out this year? I mean,
I know we got X-Men Days of Future Past.
Yeah, I think they did a good job with First Class. I liked it a lot.
Yeah,
I'm a little worried about the cast expansion. You know, I think you get a lot of characters. It's hard to instill a lot of motivation. But I think Fox has done a decent job with that, better than DC. I think a lot of it too is I think some heroes just aren't meant to be fleshed out and like realized in like three dimensions and stuff. Like, I always say, like, as an artist, my job is to abbreviate reality, not to reflect it. You know,
right? Okay.
So at some point, it just looks like a cosplayer. You know, and,
gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So I like the idea of Superman, because there's not much there, because there's just enough to say this is a guy who can fly, and mm-hmm. here's these, you know, these elements. When I can see every seam and the texture of his costume, I'm like, that's a guy in a suit that a computer's making fly, you know. And so the suspension of disbelief is easier when there's less there, which is also why I love comics. And I like the idea of heroes, and I like heroes as an idea, which is why my book is about luchadors, because luchadors don't have alternate identities. Like, they don't
that's
have
who they are.
They are the mask. Without them, I mean, even in real life, like the actual guys who do that, the kayfabe on Lucha Libre just extends on into their lives. They go to public
everywhere,
events, with their mask.
With their mask, like,
because it's their identity.
Yeah, because the guy outside the mask is nothing.
And he's just like,
whatever. And I love that. I love the idea of heroes, and I love the characters of someone like Spider-Man and his motivations, and Batman, and even Superman to a degree. But I think that in an effort to flesh them out in movies, I think, or make them marketable and appealing, I think they do a huge disservice by limiting the possibilities of what they could be. So if you give someone like Wolverine no backstory, and he's just this killing machine who's obviously built just to kill, I mean, he's got, you know, blades for fingers,
mm-hmm, right,
like, that whole thing, once that's just like, oh, he's the idea of a force of nature, that immutable force of death in nature, and he, you know, like, I like that idea. Mm-hmm. When I find out who he was as a kid and what he's interested in and what makes him sad,
you're
like, oh, and now, like, now it's just a fucking guy. You know?
Yeah, now he's just a person. Yeah,
Wolverine's
he's
a pussy.
Not
a... So I do. You know, like, and
Wolverine, you're a pussy.
Wolverine's been a pussy for a long
time. It's true,
time.
Though. Yeah.
I picked up that book where he's like running a school now, and he's like caring about kids.
Oh,
just,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's just, and I'm just like, I just want to see, and that's just like what Ryan's talking about. Like, I want to see shit I can't see in real life. Like, I can't stand when I pick up an X-Men comic and it's like 22 pages of guys having conversations, of just talking heads. I'm like, I got conversations at work every day.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
I don't have is dudes with blades coming out of their hands
yeah.
and
like
a guy
punching another
lasers
guy, yeah.
out of his fucking eyes. Yeah. And I want to see the laser eye guy blow some shit up.
Yeah.
That's because they can. And I don't need to see that his suit is really well drawn and well rendered, and that the background looks like, you know, like every little detail's there. Like, I like the idea of them, you know? Like,
yeah.
And I think that movies tend to pollute the idea. I think Marvel's done a good job of keeping it keeping it, you know, cohesive. Like, they give you enough motivation, you know.
Yeah.
They sum up Captain America where he's like, he's talking about how he doesn't like bullies, you know. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a great thing to lesson to learn. Like, this guy was weak, he's now strong. The thing he got from being weak was that he doesn't like, you know,
people. Yeah, I actually really thought pick on somebody that was else. A really yeah. good, like, delivery. It's like, why do you want to kill Nazis? He's like, I don't want to kill Nazis, I just don't like bullies. And right when he said that, I was like, you know, they really nailed the Steve Rogers character in this, you know.
Yeah, but then you get, like, something like Man of Steel, you know, the turd that is, and you're like, nobody's motivation is really clear. Like, why wouldn't Clark want to do everything he could to help people? Why would he not help his
yeah.
dad?
Exactly,
why,
yeah.
Why would Zod want to terraform Earth when he can be a god on Earth? Like, oh, no, yeah, we're going to make it just like the planet where we're just normal people.
Yeah, it's just, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like, I get, that's the thing with it. Like, don't get me wrong, I like the action in Man of Steel because it was fine. Because like, I'll tell people, everyone's like, oh, no, Superman Return was better. I'm like, Superman Return, that motherfucker doesn't throw a punch.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Rewatch that fucking piece
He
of
drinks
shit.
Punch. Like, yeah. That's all he does. Like,
and I'm like, yeah, but yeah, you sit there and you realize going like, yeah, to me, I think it would have been a lot better if he's able to do all this stuff, and then it's like his father, you know, dies of a heart attack, and it's like, even with all this power, just like in the one comics series yeah. part.
Well, he actually murders his father in the original one too, because he's like, "Come on, Dad, I'll race you," and he takes like two steps, and then his dad's like, "Ugh," and then dies. So it's like, you killed your own father.
But yeah, but that gives him like, even with all this power, right. I still couldn't save him. Unlike that within the movie, where it's like, there's a tornado, it's like, I can save you.
Yeah, I can. Yeah,
yeah.
Save
I can totally
everyone.
Be there. Yeah, I can yeah. save this entire. It's just the news might
blow.
Bother me.
Yeah, I could
like,
blow
yeah.
out the tornado.
I can take
I wanted.
Care
yeah,
of this.
Yeah. So I think motivation is key, and I think that hero, like that kind of mythos, like, you know, comics being like modern American mythos, I think is a powerful thing. So I tend to stick to comics more than I like. I like the movie versions of them mm-hmm. sometimes, but for me, like, they tend to live on comics, and I think that move for comics to get more cinematic has been kind of disappointing.
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
that things like Hawkeye can do it well, you know, even though they're kind of ground level and not telling these like super stories, they're doing it in a compelling way that can only be done in comics, like the Pizza Dog issue. You can't film that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? and then I also think things like Daredevil are great, and they're just, you know, yeah, they're easy to digest. They're clear cut motivation. It's like one story done in 22 pages, you know,
yeah.
so.
Yeah, done.
It's kind of what I've always preferred is just, is paring it down, I think, more than anything. Yeah. I think the compulsion
there's
to put more in.
There's nothing wrong with the motivation being something's right and something's wrong. Why,
yeah.
why do you have to overthink every
Yeah, like,
little
why
detail?
Is it wrong? And could
yeah.
it be right?
I don't need to know the backstory of the dude who's the villain, because that's not important. The point is
he's a
villain.
He's a bad
He's doing
yeah.
something bad. Someone needs to stop him. That's all the motivation I need, and then I need some good art.
Yeah,
I think a lot
dialogue.
Of comics have become, look what I did there. See what I did there? I mean, like, literally, that's like yeah. Loeb writes comics that way. I'm sure when he's writing his comics out and he makes some callback to something that happened in the 40s, he's like, yeah, you see what I did there?
Yeah.
And uh-huh. there's so much of this, like,
wink,
just
wink, nudge, nudge.
Process
yeah.
flexing that goes on where it's like, look how I can weave this into continuity and you didn't see how this
yeah.
was there the
yeah.
whole time. And I'm like, how about you focus first on telling a compelling story and then worry about the details?
Yeah.
And it can all be undone yeah. tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, and it's all about when you pitch comics. It's they always want, what's the hook? What's the
yeah,
hook?
Yeah.
Well, the hook is that it's going to be well drawn and well written.
And well written, a good story.
And they're like,
you know,
but what's the hook?
Like
oh, it's a transvestite. There's the fucking
yeah.
hook.
Yeah,
it's a werewolf transvestite yeah. who works at a deli.
Well,
like,
yeah,
all right, got it.
I think these big companies are about
so,
controlling the
like
news
it,
cycle.
But let's make it a Dunkin' Donuts and we're fine.
Even better.
Yeah, they always got to have some notes.
Yeah,
they got to contribute to some part. What if he doesn't fly? What if he crawls really fast?
Yeah, but that's the whole point. He's called Flyman. Like,
yeah.
No,
he's
flying.
Now baby crawling guy.
Yeah, which yeah. is why I do my own comic. And
perfect.
You know,
yeah.
like, I just I don't.
You're
I have
the
no,
boss. You can do.
And I can do whatever
you.
I want, but
yeah.
I give myself rules. Like, that's the thing too. Is I think a lot of people, you know, they see this wild beyonder, and you know, like someone at DC, it's like, oh, we've got thousands of characters, and then we got to find a way to make them work. And I'm like, nah, just how about you just focus on three or four?
Yeah, exactly.
And do
pick
that
the ones
and tell a compelling story. And so. Even though like there is a world of like luchadors in my comic, it's like I'm telling the story of this guy. It's a very simple world in Lucha Libre. There's bad guys and there's good guys. There's rudos and technicos.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like you're going for the belt. There's one goal. I mean, there's
right.
so the motivation is so clear cut and simple.
And I love his motivation too, where like you said, like his identity. If you haven't, I don't want to spoil anything, but definitely check it out. I watched
spoilers.
Well, there's you can read it on his page and everything. You read some of his work and like. The story is so compelling because it's like you said, it's their identity. And imagine like if yourself, like if all of a sudden like someone stole your identity, was like running off and like
mm-hmm.
doing whatever with yourself. Like you're like, well, I have to create myself again. And like that whole like process of like,
yeah, I like
oh,
that idea. I thought
you know,
it was really
so
cool.
That, and it's beautifully drawn. Like I love the action in it. I love the, you know, because we grew up watching wrestling. We knew about like, you know, Rey Mysterio. Like, that was one of his like, that's kind of I think where most of the world unless you were raised in Luchador, like really kind of got like, oh, okay, so that's what it's about. And they kind of, you know, jazzed it up for WWF and all that too. But you kind of got you got the idea of what it was. So to see it like so well drawn and so like compelling is like, oh, wow, like it's so cool because it's like it ties it all in together. So
definitely
liking it a lot.
No, yeah, and that's true. Because, and also with your own characters, it's like you said, you can write your own thing. But when you get someone else's character, you know, it's really hard because then you're like, well, I think this is a really good storyline. I'm going to draw it this way. But then you get all the backlash of fans going like, okay. Like people get pissed off of like, it's like, oh, you gave like Spider-Man, like with the Sam Raimi movie, like they were all pissed off that he could actually shoot webbing. It wasn't a thing. And I'm like, to me, I was like, yeah, I was like, I'm a hardcore Spider-Man fan. I would like to see him design it. But then I'm also, yeah, but you've got a lot of people jumping into this not knowing who Spider-Man is and to have to sit down and explain he's a scientist. He's really smart. It's like, you know, it was just like an easy move. Just be like, just make him shoot webbing.
Yeah.
And then it factored in the second movie, which was smart because then when he's losing his powers, he couldn't. And it's like, okay, you made it work. So, yeah. But, yeah, so as soon as you start toying with somebody's, like, background, that's why it's great when you can just write your own thing.
Yeah,
and be like,
once you're tweaking the knobs to control mass appeal, you know, it's like I'm a big proponent of do what you love and then have, you know, have that pull in the people who are fans of that.
Yeah, the draw and show, like you draw and you get it out there, and if you like it, you don't.
And the gravity of that will pull in kind of other people.
Because then other people who
like
it,
what Ryan does with Acme, you know, it's like he's focusing on the thing. Drawing comics is a solitary deal. Like we hunch over an artboard for 18 hours at a clip.
Right.
And then reading comics is kind of, you know, solitary.
Yeah.
And so that interaction that can happen is just fantastic. It's like it's such a weird, like putting it out in the void and then you see sales numbers or whatever, but to like actually talk to people about, like, just hearing people notice like the kind of chair I drew in a panel,
right?
It's like,
yeah.
Oh great, like I did research that and it was important to me that you have that kind of chair. I'm glad somebody picked up on it because it wasn't just like, oh, they just blew right past it.
I mean, I'm just as bad at that too. I'll read an entire comic in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, well, I know how long it took that dude to draw that shit.
And you're like, damn,
I'm just as bad.
So being able to interact, I mean, that's what initially drawn me to cons. And when I go to cons, you know, like I only talk to like other artists and I talk to editors. And so, you know, just the networking with like people who understand kind of the thing I'm passionate about, and then having to weed through cosplayers and TV stars and all this other bullshit, or the line for Twilight, it's kind of bullshit. So I like that. I like that Ryan's doing this thing where, I mean, that's what really drew me to participate, is that it's just comics. There's no cosplayer. There's no TV stars. It's just the people who do the thing and the people who appreciate the thing,
right,
the interaction that they can have and see and have discussions without having to be distracted by video games or Hollywood release. And I think the gravity of that, like this, the passion for that is kind of is pure enough that it pulls in other people who would want to see like what the core fundamentals are, rather than putting out this broad appeal thing where we
the
get
marketing,
like a movie star.
Like the brand,
that pulls in a casual observer who's never really going to feel the connection with an artist and stuff. So if you see people being enthusiastic about a thing, it'll pull in other people and they can appreciate the enthusiasm rather than just having people and people saying, oh, there, here's a crowd. I want to see what this crowd is about.
Exactly.
It never really it's too big to sustain itself. It's not a solid enough base. So
And I kind of look at Acme almost as if I'm like curating a show. Like it's everybody's handpicked there. I get emails every year. People, oh, how do I buy like a thing? Well, we don't really have that.
Yeah. It's not like
you can't buy space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not to say, like, I'm not going to go out
opposed
on a high horse.
To it, but
I'm not going to go on a high horse and be like, oh, no. Like, of course I would like to make a profit from doing it.
Yeah.
Because I spend a lot of time on the graphic design side of it and a lot of time emailing. You know, there's a lot of hours invested in it. So it's not like I'm opposed, you know.
To making
it.
I'm
not opposed to selling out. I mean, if I would sell out as long as it didn't go against
Stanley is
going to
be here for 1 hour only.
Yeah, as long as it didn't $3,000. My own core values. You know, I'm not against turning a profit.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm also not going to sell boosts to someone who makes jewelry.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Or
know,
cosplay.
That's not what I want. You know, I actually actively am against that. And that's why I have great partners in Bookmans and Samurai. They understand that.
Yeah,
it's a... It's an art event inside, enveloped by a comic book event in Free Comic Book Day. But to me, Acme is an art event.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to come and flip through portfolios. I want
strike up conversations
and be like, oh, man, that's a really great cast shadow you drew there.
Yeah,
holy shit. Well, when I was doing that, I was thinking this. Yeah. That's what I want it to be about, is celebrate the creators who put a lot of work in there. Because when you're looking at that page and you read it, it takes you 22 seconds to read that page. It took that guy
a day.
Eight to 10 to 12 hours to draw
that page down.
Well, that's what I felt like. I used to do web comics, And that's the same thing. Like, you'd work on them. It'd take you, like, maybe an hour, 2 hours, you know, redrawing it, inking it, digital. And then it's like, you just realize it's like, you got your gag. You thought of it. This is great. Goes up on the webpage. People spend, what, 5 seconds? Yeah, no, like, that was good. Yeah, and that then was they funny. Move on. Yeah. And then you're just all like, ugh.
I think the sick thing is I'm okay with that trade-off. You know, like, I'm okay spending 2 months on something that someone will take 10 minutes to blow through, but... But the cool thing is just interacting with the people after the fact and like discussing it or and the cool thing about Acne too is like talking with other artists where we just discuss like process and stuff, you know, like I love like that's the part of conventions I really like is just talking about like what kind of brushes you use, what paper you're using,
right,
how you get that.
Where do you start?
That's the like, whole thing with sort of the drink and draw and even the thing we're gonna do at Film Bar the night before. It's not a oh hey, come look at us, we're fucking awesome. It's basically an excuse to get 20 of my friends in a room together around a table so we can all talk shop.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's really...
And you guys can come and enjoy like what we do as opposed to...
Yeah, I mean,
like
last year we did one and, you know, it turned into Eric Larson and Eric Canetti and a bunch of guys drawing at a table. And then Todd McFarlane shows up and starts hanging out with Eric Larson and they're drawing together.
Wow.
And it's not like there's like, you know, it's not like people are like, oh man, remember when you did Spider-Man, whatever? Everyone's like, holy shit, look at how he inked that line.
Yeah, like Jesus.
Oh, I didn't know you could move the quill that way and get like that line weight and shit. You know, that's what was cool. And it's, you know, even though a lot of us my age are like, holy shit, that's Todd McFarlane and Eric Larson.
Yeah, hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that image turned into a cover. Eric used it for a Simon cover.
I saw that.
That's awesome.
That was great. Todd told me didn't have enough lines on it. He's like, there's not enough lines on there. He's like,
And then Eric Larson's like, I already inked that. Like, it was a fully finished ink drawing. And then Todd just added to it for like an
that's
hour.
That's funny, yeah.
I kind of like that, too, that like kind of competitiveness almost also where it's like they're playing off each other.
Or, doing that. Actually, I was listening to, because one of the podcasts on our network straight out of Austin, they were talking about that, too, with like the cons and stuff like that. They're like, yeah, I remember going back in the day with those cons and it was just comics and it was just the appreciation. Now it's just blown off to this huge like, and yeah, I understand that Hollywood wants to make money, but yeah, now it's more about like people going there and not really like they'll like I was excited when they started announcing like the artists and like people like for Comic-Con. I was like, oh, these are people I want to see and stuff. But then it's like also it's like Nathan Fillion. I'm like, yeah, Nathan Fillion's a good actor.
He'll be a good
like
draw,
that.
But I was like more excited
I think
about
what's kind of missed in cons nowadays too as they get bigger is you know, guys like me and Jason that go to cons, it's a business, it's work. You know, most people don't go and sit behind a table for 8 hours throughout a whole weekend.
Mm-hmm. Right, just for kicks.
Just for kicks. It's work. And, you know, I like the fandom. I like seeing people excited about it. But it is work. And when you have conventions that are so movie star heavy and so cosplay heavy, people aren't spending money. They're spending $60 to get into the convention.
Yes.
And then they're spending $10 a day to park and they're spending $20 a day to eat.
Yeah.
So the, I mean,
where you'd rather get them there.
The bigger the convention, the less the people have in their hands.
Right.
That aren't free. Last month I did a staple in Austin, and it's a convention not much bigger than Acme. They had like 60 tables.
Actually, I think they were talking about that.
And per capita, that was my most profitable convention because those dudes are there to support the artist. There's no cosplayers.
Yes.
Right. It's just come in, do your thing.
Yeah. And a low cover is like a $10 to get in.
Perfect.
Or something like that.
Probably just to cover
the
event.
The way
itself,
I see cons is as I do more recognizable work, like as I do work at Dark Horse, even if it's a little job at Dark Horse or a little job at Image, I'm not my sales are not increasing at conventions. They're going down because people just don't have the money.
Yeah.
It's an economically depressed time right now, and you're charging these people an arm and a leg to get in. And they just don't – they're not buying anything.
Yeah.
And I notice that every year people walk in at the con empty-handed. And I'll see them on Friday and Saturday and Sunday, and by Sunday they're still empty-handed.
Yeah, and it's just like
– and it sucks too because there's like a lot of great artists out there because I'll see that. Like I'll walk by the artist booth. I'm like, oh, I really like that. I like – you know, stuff, and it's just all like, well, I wish I could buy this and stuff, and it's like, you want to help support these people, but it's like, well, they – parking already took all my money, so
– right.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Well, that's what surprised me too, because like I think it was the last year Mike Mignola was there.
I kept
and, like,
missing.
I couldn't believe how like no one was there. Like no one like went up to him and was like, "Hi, like I'm a huge fan." And I just kind of asked him because he was kind of like tucked away in the middle,
yeah,
between a couple other people. And I was like, "How do people not know you're right here? Like how is there not like a line of people wanting to come talk to you?" He goes, "Well, they come and go. They're in waves. There's a lot of things." And he had kind of said the same thing because there's so many other things going on,
yeah,
that well, you're trying to get to that it's hard to like.
Yeah, there's a lot of I think there's a lot of science that goes into how to run cons and how to make it so everyone's successful. Emerald City does a great job doing that.
It's going on right now, isn't
yeah,
it?
It's
yeah,
first, it's the first year I haven't been there in like 7 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you chose to come
actually,
here
yeah, I
instead.
Think our buddy TJ, he
just went. Yeah, he's there
now. He was actually on the Penny Arcade strip search. He does Stranger Danger and just released the Tenko King. But yeah, he's over there doing that. And then also Annabelle, she was on her show socially.
Yeah, Martinez. Yeah,
I know Annabelle.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does good work. I like. Oh, yeah, I got her Samus piece that she did on a poster. I think I have hers done. And that was awesome. Like, and then it was great too because like she was smart enough that she actually had bags for like pieces.
Yeah.
So that like if you went to her and bought a bag as well as the art, like you actually could then walk around.
Yeah, that's
and, like,
the
get
only
other
big
people's...
thing I had a problem with. It's like I want to buy this stuff, but sometimes I'm like I will have to come back when I'm leaving because I don't want to carry this around and damage it.
Yeah, so. I think as exhibitors, I think you know, and I think another thing cool thing about like a drink and draw is that we talk about like tricks of just conventioning.
Yeah.
Like, you know, make sure you've got sleeves on hand for your prints because
right.
you don't want people to have them dinged up and then they've got like a, you know, because in as much as people are buying stuff from you, they're also buying a story.
Mm. Right.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Like,
that's
why
I sketch for free like at conventions. I'm like, I'll do little doodles. I'll do little doodles for free because, you know, like they, you know, chances are while I'm sitting there doodling, they'll buy something
right.
else and they'll be like, and then they've got this hand done thing. Like everything I do, a lot of, or most of it is hand done. Like I hand silk screen my prints.
Oh,
and
nice.
There's limited editions. And then so people know that like I handled
like
the thing.
That was you doing
yeah,
it.
And
it
there's
wasn't
limited.
Just like
and
then
when I say
down.
Limited editions, I never do anything more than 100.
Right.
And I think I've done. No, yeah, that's it. Oh, no. Yeah. 100.
Yeah.
Is
there's only like 10,000.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, you know, like, so you know that there's only, you know, X amount of these and I'm not secretly printing more. Of
yeah. Like on a factory
and stuff
somewhere.
Like that. So if you give people a more compelling narrative, because there's stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Then I've got stuff, but I've got stuff with a story.
Right,
like,
as opposed
is,
to just like
something where,
buy
yeah,
a...
like I hand ink the negs on these screens, like I actually burn them myself and then put them all down. So this is all my work, and I didn't hit print 10 times. Like I printed them
yeah,
10 times,
yeah.
and then when people buy that and they hang it up in their house, they can tell they get to tell the story.
Like, yeah, like
oh, yeah,
by
guy,
the way, yeah,
there's only 10 of these. This guy did this by hand. You know, this is on metallic paper. Like you know, you can't get that done commercially. On
right.
Print, you know, so just little things that you can't do. You know, or you know that require a little bit more effort. The more compelling a narrative that you give. The better chance you have of somebody wanting to get your stuff, because otherwise it's just stuff, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's got printouts and stuff, and so you know with the comics they're pretty mass produced, but if you buy it from me, I sketch in it for you.
Right,
so,
exactly.
You know,
I'll sign
there's
it
a story,
it.
You know. So and trading tricks like that, I think is a great thing of convening like that. So I don't know where the hell I was going with that point before that. But
I think you're talking
basically buy shit.
Well, no, I
from
mean
artists.
I think
well,
you know,
yeah.
But those are the kind of things that you can't get. You don't hear those stories if you're not at a convention.
Yeah,
because
a lot of times
I mean?
People go to con and I say I bought this figure or this or that, and it's like,
yeah.
Well, big deal.
You
could have
bought it on
store.
Amazon. Yeah,
yeah
or
you
could have
gotten
eBay.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I've noticed. There's some people who will buy things. It's like you get this on Amazon, you get this there, you get this there. But when you buy these like prints that people draw, it's like you can't get them anywhere.
Or you
else.
Went and specifically said I commissioned you to like do
yeah.
this for me.
It's
like that's like you said a bond.
That's like kind of a cool.
Yeah, that's really. I mean, I don't have all the answers, and I don't blame people for spending their money at someone else's booth. Everyone's got a limited income or whatever. One thing I don't really understand is the one thing you can get at a con you can't get anywhere else is a original piece of artwork. And it dumbfounds me that people just don't sell gangbusters of original art at cons. I've never understood that.
Yeah.
You know, I've even had people like look through and some of my originals I sell pretty cheap. You know, they'll come through. Oh, like, how much is that? I'll be like, oh, it's only $50. I've had it for years. Like, whatever. And then like, oh, well, I'll just buy like two of these prints, and that adds up to like $40.
Yeah, so it's like $10
yeah,
more. Like, you could have the original.
$10
piece,
more.
Yeah.
You could. Yeah, it's yeah. it's bizarre.
That's why I used to love about when Scotty Young was first getting out is he would take photos of the commissions he had done. So he'd advertise them on his like site, just saying like, look what we did, and he'd sell them. I think it was like $50-$100 at the time, whatever he was
yeah.
charging. But they were like masterpieces because he would do all kinds of like textures to the pages and
yeah.
like even the type of paper he was using was stuff. And that's why I liked is like even on his web, you can still just commission him like, hey, I want you to do this and this. And all he'll do is he'll take a photo so you can show what he did. And then he just mails it to you like, here you go, you know.
And yeah, Scotty, I was there like San Diego Comic-Con like 4 or 5 years ago. He had a stack of original pages that were 30 each, I think, or maybe 25 each. Yeah, and you could just whatever. And there was some good shit in there. Like I saw people, he'd be like, oh, how about this one? He's like, oh, I didn't realize that was in there. Yeah, it's 30, whatever. Like he realized some really good shit was in there. Well,
it all depends on the artist. Some people, like I don't consider what I do. I mean, it's art, but I don't consider it like fine art, you know?
Right, it's not a masterpiece.
I can buy two lunches with, you know, that because I got paid to draw that page already. Mm-hmm. So you want to give me more money so I can, you know, have a nice dinner tonight? I'll sell it for 30, 40, 50 bucks. Because otherwise, I'm just lugging it around.
Yeah,
and then there's other guys. That, like, I met an amazing artist at Emerald City last year who had, like, 3 or 4 portfolios of just, like, beautiful work. He doesn't sell any of his originals. Ever.
Really?
But they're just there so you can come up and be like, oh, these are nice.
You know, he's having a personal archive. And, you know, so it all depends. But
I don't sell my originals. I figure it's, like, my kid's kind of legacy.
Well, that's what just happened on the gentleman just passed away. Like, his wife, the guys from Comic Book Men, his, like, cousin or nephew came in to, like, sell them some original works.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they were just, like, reduns of covers and stuff he had done. And basically his widow was like, well, I have boxes and boxes of his work. So they auctioned it.
Yes.
And it, like, literally went for, like, $20,000, $30,000 of just, like, scraps of his that were just, like, hand-drawn or painted.
If I did an issue of Spider-Man or something like that, then of course those originals, you know, you charge what the market bears.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So something like that, I would maybe give a whole issue to my kids or put it in a safety deposit box.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like when you're
ready. I mean, that's not the case so far.
Yeah. I also don't ink my work. I mean, I go from pencil and I digitally do.
Oh, everything. Nice. Yeah, so everything's still pencil when they.
Yeah.
When they
so I just have pencils. Oh, cool. And pencils don't sell as well as ink.
I'm surprised because I love the pencils. Like I got all of a lot of Joe Mads like pencil work. I love his kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's really kind of cool though.
Because I kind of feel like when you ink over, I mean, the ink is beautiful stuff too. But
yeah,
it's like,
you know, it does
you lose that like.
There's a little life you lose. Yeah, definitely.
Because you can actually see like where they started to shade and stuff.
I think anyone who inks their own work is always trying to capture the energy. Which is why there's professional inkers, which I could never be. You know, I can do my own stuff.
And that's what I like about digital, too, because then you can try different styles, too.
I mean, I did a little bit of hand stuff in there. There's some actual scanned-in artwork. And I think in issue 4, there's a sequence I'm going to do where I actually brush ink everything.
Oh, so it's
got, like, a lot of energy to it. It's almost a dream sequence-ish. I don't know. No spoilers.
No spoilers.
But, yeah,
spoilers.
But, and I think the next thing I do, I'm going to hand ink, because this digital process actually has really slowed me down. when I'm on, like, page 15 of a comic, and I'm like, why the fuck do I do it this way?
Right.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah. And now I can't not do it, because I've done it
for the
first 3 issues.
Yeah,
that's funny. 3 more issues, and then it's all just going to be hand-painted.
Nice.
Very cool.
Very cool. Well, I don't know. How are we looking on time, Steve? We doing good?
Yeah, actually, I was thinking we're about an hour, so if you guys, we could promote what's coming on.
Yeah, everyone tell us where you're from. Give a shout-out as to where we can find you. Talk again one last time about Acme, and then I think we'll close this down.
Yeah, everyone should just check out the Arizona Comic Mini Expo, the website. We got a merchandise page up there. Because there probably won't be – I'm trying to get people to pre-order because it's not like we're going to have a merch table at the show. I'm not going to carry 50 shirts. So if people want any of that awesome Corey Walker artwork in the print or in the shirt, they probably need to get it ahead of time. Some artists have donated some original artwork that's going to go – like I said, because it's not really a cheap endeavor. We got with Stuart and Catherine Immonen. Amazing guests, you know, they have to be flown out, hotel. We got a couple guests coming from California, give them a little bit of money for their time and energy. So it's not a cheap thing, so we're still trying to, even though we got all of our sponsors in place, we're still trying to raise a little bit of money, but it's going to go happen regardless.
Yeah.
So
what I love, though, is like, so if I pick it up in person, it's only 10, but I can have it shipped just for a couple bucks more, like looks like 20 bucks more if I want, like,
right,
because
I'm getting a lot of people. Stuart does not do a lot of Stuart Immonen does not do a lot of sketches.
Mm.
He does not sketch at conventions. So he's going to only do 4 or 5 commissions at Acme. All the money goes to Hero Initiative.
Okay, cool.
So we set it up with them. But I'm getting a lot of emails from people all over the country like, "Oh, we want to get in on this Stuart Immonen thing." And I'm like, So everything on the website has 2 prices because, like, you know, people are ordering shirts from North Carolina, South Carolina.
They just want
it,
yeah.
People want it. So I realize not everyone's going to be going there. So, there's a shipping price and a pickup price.
Yeah, it looks great.
Acme is really the big thing. The night before, we'll all be at the Film Bar in Phoenix on May 2nd. hanging out, and there'll be a bunch of originals displayed on the walls. And then my personal site is super75comics.wordpress.com, I'm pretty sure. I'm terrible at that.
Are you guys on Twitter or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, Twitter's Ryan Cody. Facebook is super75comics.
Yeah, it looks like that's one.
Yeah.
We'll make sure to follow you guys on Twitter.
Yeah.
Plus, yeah, we'll obviously promote too as well. We do, like, every week we send out, like, hey, here's recent followers. And we'll put a banner on our site too for the Acme so we can make sure that everyone can go to it and find out all the info. How about you, Jay Gonzo?
Sorry, I'm sneezing.
Yeah. He's
I'm
allergic to.
Yeah. No, awesome. Yeah,
he's allergic to self promotion.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Achoo!
I'll be at Acme, and I'll be at the film bar, Drink and Draw.
Nice.
You know, again, with the Acme thing, I just want to say too that it's the most Arizona of Arizona comics events. I would say it's really kind of the cream of the crop. Like it's a group I'm really proud to be a part of. You know, a lot of local things happen, and there's like one really good person and then like a couple of like pretty cool and then like a lot of meh. But this is probably the highest caliber of Arizona talent that you can find in one place ever. I mean, like other than like maybe Phoenix Con, but they're going to be a little spread out and a little.
True. Yeah. This is like very concise of,
you
like,
know, it's really that a pretty good company to be in. I always feel honored when I'm looking down the row at guys like Tony Parker and Corey and dudes like that. So it's you know, Armand's there. I mean, it's everyone who like is like a legit, you know, Arizona, you know, from Arizona and a legit comic artist. So I'll be there. And then personally, you can go to castleandkeypublications.com, and that has links to my social media. So I'm on Twitter, and I have a Facebook page, and I don't know what either of those are. No, my Twitter is like at Lamano Comic, which is kind of a lot to remember. So just go to my website,
click over to my Twitter.
Yeah, follow me. So
definitely, we'll have to put
post everything when the episode goes up on our website. So, but yeah, I want to thank you guys for coming on. And if you guys enjoyed yourself and you want to come back on, you're welcome back anytime.
Anytime you got something to promote or you guys are in town, cool. Definitely swing on by.
We love this. Actually, to be honest, you guys are the first guests we've had on Longbox.
Oh, nice.
Official one. So then when you come back on, I'll be like returning guests.
Yeah. That's right. Inaugural guests.
Exactly. Veterans. Well, Steve, it's going to close it out for you. Where can we find you at?
You can find me on pretty much every single show on the 4i Radio Network.
Pretty much. Your network.
I keep making shows way too much. And then at Steve N. Mooney Jr. on the Twitter. Also, don't forget, this is released afterwards, but hopefully I'll be doing more stand-up. And also follow me on at Steve N. Mooney Jr. on Instagram, where I post some of my artwork as well there. And Kyle, you?
They can find us at LongBoxCast and, of course, at www.longboxcast.com. And as always, I think that's going to wrap it. And enough said today. That was definitely a good show. Forward. Thank you guys so much
for coming.
Thank
you. Thanks for having us.
Had another sneeze and I blew my nose. I looked in the mirror at my pigeon chest. I had to put on my clothes because it made me dizzy. This has been another fine production of the 4i Radio Network. For more great shows, check out www.4iradio.com.